I meet Elizabeth Talbot, who is the auction rooms director at T.W. Gaze in Diss. We find out about the history of auctions, how she came to choose her profession, and how she got into national television. I'd like to ask you about the history of auctions. I don't know when they all began or...
Oh my goodness, how long time have we got to speak on? The history of auctions goes back really a long, long way into social history. I think for as long as people have bartered and traded, then the concept of auctions has been part of the thinking, because if you have an object or a good that one person wants, but somebody wants it more, or they're prepared to pay a little bit more, then it encourages competition. And I think that natural instinct to outbid somebody has been in mankind for many centuries. And I think it became sort of formalised, certainly in the 18th century, and certainly in the 18th century within the fine arts and industry, the fine arts and objects, the chattels side of things. That was when it really was established. And Sotheby's, I think, was one of the leading, if not the leading, company to establish itself, doing what it does best and providing that service for the public. So it's a long, long time that sort of concept has been around. And of course, it's different in different industries. You have the cattle auctions, livestock auctions, property auctions and land auctions, car auctions. And of course, we deal in antiques and fine arts here. So everyone is slightly different. Everyone has a slightly different motivation and dynamic. But in essence, it's the competitive market in real time as a live event.
There seems to have been lots of different ways of bidding.
So T.W. Gaze has been around a long time as well. They were established in 1857, and initially it was real people arriving at an auction ring and bidding in person. And that's been very much the way that auctions have run throughout the 20th century and into the 21st century. And then with the development of technology, as with all industries and aspects of life, there's been a shift in how people do engage with auctions. So you can bid in person by attending an auction and lifting your finger or raising your eyebrow or winking at the auctioneer. So you can bid in person, or you can bid over the telephone. So you can act as if you're in the room, but you're actually speaking to a clerk live as the auction takes place, and they relay your bid to the auctioneer. You can leave a written bid, which means that the bid is placed with the auctioneer or the clerk, and they bid on your behalf when the lot comes up, so that you don't actually have to engage with the sale at all. And some people prefer that. They don't like the anxiety, the nervousness of being in the room, or they haven't got the time, or they're doing something else. And also, of course, as I say, the technology has taken over to a point where now a lot of people, a big proportion of the marketplace, is remote bidding via computer, where people are sitting in the comfort of their home or they're attending another event, but can engage with the auction that you're doing by pressing a computer button. That can be done either just via audio, where you can sit and listen to the auction from afar and you can hear the auctioneer and the increments and join in that way. And some auction houses do actually have visual cameras on the auctioneer, so that you can actually sort of partake in the auction by seeing what the auctioneer is looking like and doing at the time. We don't do that here. We just have the audio, but it is one way that you can do it as well. So there are different ways that people engage with auctions at different stages, yeah.
I'd like to understand, same organisation, Gaze's, I guess, deals with homes and properties, machine sales, things like that. Mm-hmm. And did they come together, or is it just beginning at being rural? And
well, you asked about the history of auctions. Now, if you look at the history of agency, so Gaze's were established in 1857, and they were built really out of their rural roots. So we're in an agricultural region. And where there are farms and there is land, or there are estates, people have parcels of property which need to be managed and bought and sold. So if you have land, then likelihood you have buildings on the land. And that's where the property side evolves from. It really starts with land. Then there's a need for property overseeing and management and sale and purchase. And therefore the estate agent side evolves. And then if you have buildings, you have contents, and therefore that's really where the integration of the chattels, the contents, the antiques, the fine art, all stem from that. So as a firm for Gazers, it started as a nucleus in the 19th century in the Victorian times as requiring a service to the local farmers and the landowners, etc. And the natural progression through that is that they end up sort of doing all those facets under one umbrella, one firm. And some people don't know that the same firm does all those items, but Gazers do support all those things. But not all auctioneers have estate agents associated or have rural departments as well. Not all estate agents have auction houses. So to that extent, Gazers are not unique, but they're certainly in the minority of how they have continued to maintain that unified, multi-disciplined business. And I've worked for firms in the past that have, sold off their auction house, separated it out and kept a focus on one or the other of the strands. But Gazers has maintained really its origins of being all things to all people. Because often a client will have the need to sell their house and to sell some of the contents. Somebody will buy another house and then need to fill the space. So to have the facility to help clear or to provide contents, is an aid and an assistance and a positive thing for a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. I wanted to know whether there's rules and regulations, whether you're regulated, like banks are regulated by the Bank of England, whatever.
Okay, TW Gaze are regulated by the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors, and not all firms of estate agents and auction houses are regulated by the same bodies, and not all auction houses are regulated by anybody. I think you can be in business without being affiliated to a professional body, but because we have the direct link via all our specialisms, we are now all incorporated within that. So the auction house is very strictly regulated. Which means everything from, the money laundering and the best practice and the clients' money accounts, etc. All these facets are very stringently overseen by a professional body who governs how we operate and the fact that we operate correctly, professionally and above the law. And can I just edit that bit? It's yes. Not above the law, because that's the wrong way around, isn't it? Within the law. So we operate within the law and are accountable. And so we operate within the law and are accountable. And so, for example, people may have heard of red book valuations in terms of land and property, and that is the preparation of valuations in a correct and accountable way, which relate to bricks and mortar and to land. And in the last few years, the RICS have brought into line the antiques and auction side of things. So we also provide all our professional valuations within those stringent guidelines. So they may seem expensive, but what it means is that the customer, the client, is awarded the assurance that they have support and backing by a professional body who will withhold the correctness of what we do. And that is something which, as I say, not all auction houses have to or do conform to. So we are slightly different from that perspective to some of our competitors, yeah.
Can I just ask you about why you thought you'd like to work in auctions?
Why did I think I'd like to work in auctions? I didn't think I did. I fell into it kind of by accident a long time ago. So in a nutshell, I attended school, as everybody did. I did my A-levels, as they were in those days, and with the intention of going to university. That was my hope and desire. But from the age of 11, my ambition was to go to St Andrews University in Scotland. I'd just fallen in love with the city, as many people do, and I had no idea what I wanted to do after university. But despite the fact I applied to two faculties, I failed to achieve a place in either, and narrowly missed out. But what that told me really was that academia in its purest form was probably not for me. So I then spent time trying to think of what I enjoyed doing. And it was my parents, I always give credit, particularly to my mother, who encouraged me, and this is a lesson to everybody, I think, to consider what you enjoy doing in life, what gives you joy and pleasure. And it was obvious that we spent as a family our spare time, our holidays, etc., in museums, at flea markets, in art galleries, at auctions, in National Trust properties. And the love really was, the passion was, objects and things that sort of spoke of history. And therefore, she encouraged me to pursue the possibility of working in an auction house. And I went through different procedures, fully expecting it to be a long, slow process. I was given the guidance that it would be, a very difficult thing to enter, a difficult profession to enter. In actual fact, despite the fact I'd laid my stall out to have a long road to travel, I fell upon my feet quite quickly, and I did apply to a firm who, unbeknownst to me, was looking for a pupil. And they had a 3-year vacancy for a pupil and a trainee, which after a couple of interviews I managed to secure. And that was where it began. I just fell in love. It was like being a child in a sweet shop on Christmas every day. It was just an amazing location full of people with enthusiasms and passions and a willingness to share their knowledge. And every opportunity I was given, I took. So whether it was sweeping floors and unpacking tea chests, I don't know if you remember tea chests, but the joy of unpacking all these objects every day, and learning about them and understanding values and understanding the psychology of an auction rooms and a marketplace and the economies. It's very much based on economics, as well as the history and all the fascinating, facts behind different categories of specialism, from watches through to fine art, through to ceramics, through to toys, everything in there. And then I was able to learn to value and to go out on the road and visit people in their homes and learn all this, necessary skills that were required for that, which is a great privilege, to be in somebody's private home. You are a visitor, a guest, and you're passing an opinion on their objects. So I don't take that lightly. So it was valuation. And then within 18 months of starting, I was given the opportunity to take to the rostrum and be an auctioneer, which I took. And I've just kept on going. Everything has been progressive and not always easy. But I took my professional qualifications. I did return to academia. I took my professional qualifications via a remote method whilst I was working. So I then got letters after my name, which was also helpful in opening doors and progression throughout my career. And then when I moved to Diss as a newly married person back in 1995, I joined Gazers, and within 5 years I was given the opportunity to become a partner of the firm, which in itself was quite a feat. And we're now directors rather than partners, but I'm very proud to say I'm one of 4 directors of the firm. So I fell into it, but once I'd found where I was, I knew it was the right thing. I was meant to have been. So,
what was the qualification you actually took?
I qualified through what was then the professional body, which was parallel to the RICS. It was the Incorporated Society of Valuers and Auctioneers. So it actually catered far more for the fine art element of things. Although I did have to do my fair share of studying building construction, how to make a chimney, the construction of staircases, etc., and how to build foundations to buildings, and property law and all sorts of things. So it was a kind of a fairly diverse course, but it was focusing on the fine arts. And by the final year, it was all antiques and fine arts. So that was the course I took. So I was a member of their society. But then when they amalgamated with the RICS, so my initials changed after my name, so I look like I am now a chartered surveyor, but I'm not actually a chartered surveyor in the pure sense, but that's my by default. But yes, that was my qualification.
And television.
Going back a little bit. So when I worked at a firm in Nottinghamshire, I worked with a male colleague who was a year or two older than me, and I actually took over his role as pupil. He was pupil before me. Then he moved on and became manager of a firm in Lincoln. And bizarrely, when I left my first firm, I was successful in taking his role at that firm, and I became manager of an auction house in Lincoln. And then I came to Diss, and I got a phone call from the BBC to say that they were looking for female experts to join Going for a Song. And my name had been put forward by my colleague who knew that I was game and capable and quite a sound pair of hands for that sort of thing, which I was very grateful to him for. So I did several series of Going for a Song with Michael Parkinson and Eric Knowles and all the wonderful professionals and celebrities that they had on that show. So I did a fair bit of television. And then when Bargain Hunt started in the late 90s, sort of about 2000, they approached Gazers and wanted looking for auction houses to be locations for their sales. And because I'd done some television work and I enjoyed it and I knew kind of roughly what to expect, we welcomed them on board. And they enjoyed being here, so they've come back ever since. In fact, we're hosting Bargain Hunt again in 2 weeks' time, so they'll be doing some more filming and discs. And then Flog It started a year or two after Bargain Hunt, and the same thing happened. Meanwhile, Bargain Hunt had said they liked what they saw when they worked here with me, so they invited me to be one of their roving experts on the road, which I did for quite a long time. And the same with Flog It. Flog It, I then became an expert that went around the country being part of the programme there. And then, as a site, Gazers is so accommodating. It's nice and large. It's got lots happening. So we've, over the years, had many, many other programmes located here, everything from Cash in the Attic through to some of the restoring programmes, some of the regional programmes. Anglia TV had done a lot of special antique programmes from here as well. So there's been, you know, a follow-on, and it's been a relationship with the BBC which has not been too intense, but it's been very happy. And I would do more television if I could, but I have to keep my feet on the ground, and I've got a proper job, to, you know, a real job which fills more than enough of my time. And so what I do, I enjoy very, very much. But that's how it began. It began by a colleague who thought I would be up for it, and I was, and actually still, you know, the female side of things is not the common side of auctions, so I think they still lack sort of a feminine face that represents the business and represents the auction as it goes on. It's a bit better than it was. There are more people on television, but in those days it was a rarity. So
Was there much coaching to get you started to do that?
The television or
the television?
No coaching at all. But I've always said that because I was being filmed doing what I do for a living and what I'm comfortable in doing, there was no nerves, no nothing from that point of view. I was in my comfort zone, so that was fine. And you just ignore the camera and just get on and do what you're doing. I think along the way, I picked up guidance, and I've observed how to do things, and I've observed best practice, but you don't sort of go on a long-term course and sort of are taught how to be in front of the camera. It you either do it or you don't, and I presume I do something right because they keep asking me back, so that's always a good sign. No, there's no training, but you do find that you find your feet as the more you do.
Can I just ask you, have you ever sold something to the wrong person?
Have I ever sold anything to the wrong person? That's an interesting question. I have sold things to people who didn't know they were buying it. Is that what you mean? Yes? Okay. I have one very memorable occasion. I spent about 30 years of my working career telling people that it's impossible to incorrectly buy something at auction, that you always know that you're buying something. You cannot be sold something by an auctioneer and not realise that you bought it. So don't fret about going into an auction rooms. The auctioneer will know if you're bidding or not. And I had a scenario where it's actually in the room here that we're looking at. I was selling at a textiles auction a few years ago. Beneath the rostrum, just in front of me, was a mother and daughter who were having a day out and having a lovely time buying objects. And because it was clothing, we sell all sorts of things from textiles through to vintage garments through to gentlemen's attire. And the gentleman's attire auction does quite well. It tends to be very well tailored and rather nice garments. So I wasn't surprised to find that when I was offering some gentleman's items, a gentleman dashed through the front public door and made a gesture, huge sort of waving gesture towards me. So I took his bid, and I took somebody else's bid, and I went back to him and he bid again, and I took the other person. But then he bid again, third time. I knocked it down. He was a successful bidder. And I asked him his buyer's number for him to call it out. And he said, oh, I don't know. And he pointed to the two ladies in front of me and they held up their bidding number and I recorded it and we went on with the sale. I left the rostrum to go and have some refreshment in the cafe and the family were sitting as a group having their lunch. And I was called over with some hilarity and told that they had just had the best morning and they've now got a story to dine out on for many years to come. And I said, oh, what was that then? Not knowing what they were talking about. And this gentleman, Jen, had just bought some garments, which he wasn't expecting to buy. And I said, but you waved at me. You were bidding frantically. And he said, well, no, I was actually waving at my wife and daughter to tell them I'd arrived. So I said, but I went back to you with successive bids and you kept on bidding. He said, yes. He said, but I was a bit embarrassed by that stage. So I didn't know what to do and kept on buying. Anyway, he said, I'm thoroughly delighted with what I bought. And that's that. So I now have to say that it is possible to be sold something that you weren't expecting to buy like that. But it is very uncommon. The auctioneer is usually very aware through body language that somebody is engaging with a bid. It's actually very clear. And if in doubt, either the auctioneer will ask, are you scratching your nose or are you bidding? Or, you know, the person will say, oh, no, I wasn't bidding. It wasn't me. You know, they will say, are you taking a bid from me? And I might say, no, I'm not looking at you. I'm actually looking at the person sitting in the row behind you, so don't worry. So in essence, no, it shouldn't be possible. It is very rare, but I now have known it happen.
Well, thank you very much.
That's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. Now, thank you for your interest.
I was talking to Elizabeth Talbot of T.W. Gaze.